Michael, let's talk about your journey as a writer. How did you discover that you have this gift to write, this passion?
Thanks for what, and it was actually a long time coming for me. I've always, wished I was one of those kinds of people that knew he wanted to be a writer when, I wrote my first sonnet when I was six, deal. But it really wasn't that way. It was a long and circuitous sort of journey for me, and I just kind of finally, happily fumbled my way into fiction writing, and it really wasn't until I was into my 20s that I just sort of decided that I wanted to write, and I still wasn't even entirely sure what I wanted to write, but I did start to get really interested in like the fiction of Raymond Carver, and he was a big inspiration for me, and I think one of those guys that whose work seems deceptively. Whose work seems simple, but it's deceptively simple, and it can kind of lull you into the notion if you're inexperienced enough to think, I think maybe I can do this. And it's like, not everyone's going to be Raymond Carver, obviously. but it was helpful for me to really, examine his work and kind of get into the interworkings of it. And that really helped me kind of find my way in fiction, and once I stopped writing Raymond Carver stories, I could start to write my own work. And again, with, the idea of writing about, I'm from the Detroit area, and the idea of writing about the people I know here and the life I've had here, and friends and relatives and everyone, that together those things sort of, I think, gave me at least the courage to just sit down and start writing things and hope that, maybe someday I could get something out there. And there was a long period of being afraid of it too. I just wrote very quietly in the mornings. We had like a tiny apartment, but we did have a little attic, and I would go up there in the mornings and try to write. And really the only person that knew about it was my wife. And I did that for a number of years, and then just started to, slowly took a class or two over at Wayne State University in Detroit. And that kind of at least was the impetus to start showing my work to people. And so that is really how things started. And I studied over there with Sam Astrakhan and Charles Baxter, and then later with Chris Leland.
I think many writers probably begin by imitating a favorite writer the way you did with Carver. And then at some point you do that long enough that you realize, wait a minute, this is my voice.
Right. Exactly. I think that in a lot of ways that is a necessary sort of thing to do. Maybe not necessary for everyone. Some people, their voices just, come full, they just appear. And, but again, not that way for me. It took me a while, and I've always been kind of a late bloomer, and, I was that way with the literary, my literary road too, definitely.
But don't you make your living as a copywriter, an advertising copy, or?
I do, right up until recently. I just left a long-term job I had over at a place called Campbell Ewald Advertising in Detroit, and I sort of lucked into a pretty fantastic situation there. I worked part-time there for over 20 years, and they let me come in every afternoon. So I had my mornings free to work on my fiction.
Nice.
And it was pretty great. It was a nice little combination of art and commerce. I was able to.
So how could you leave that?
It was just time. I think it was. I was just ready. Also, the job was starting to, after all that time, it was also starting to get more and more intense, and I didn't want it to be that way. And so it just seemed like a good time to, you know, say goodbye. And so I'm taking a year or two off, and I'm just kind of seeing what happens.
Nice.
And trying to write as much as I can, and really just making it up as I go along.
Do you think that that kind of writing and they're very different types of writing, but do you think one helped the other?
I think it does. Yeah, I think that did, because for one thing, there is a lot of rejection in copywriting. You're constantly showing people things and they are saying no to you.
Yeah. And
no, I don't think this is going to work. Try this. So I think it did maybe toughen me up a bit and give me a slightly thicker skin. And it also taught me how to be a brutal self-editor. And I think that's one of those things that I still see when I read neophyte fiction writers' work. It's just sort of like, okay, yes, I see why you put that in there. That is a lovely turn of phrase or a delightful bon mot, but it really
trim the fat.
Yeah, you're really just making yourself happy there. That is just
I
you.
I hear you, yeah.
Showing us all how clever you are, and instead of maybe propelling the story. So it was actually very good for me in that regard as well, too. Just like knowing when I was just, okay, this doesn't need to be here. As much as I would love it to be here, it doesn't need to be. So that helped me, I think.
So you edit your own work, or do you have a first pair of eyes that you trust to be honest and slightly cruel with you? Or
that probably would be my wife. She will definitely tell me when I'm full of crap, or that this is great. This really makes sense, or that these are, this part here is problematic and this part here works. So she's pretty great in that regard. And I have a couple other people that I show things to. And, of course, you know, there's always that point where it's like, okay, well, you can be brutal, but you know, you don't have to make me cry or anything like that. You don't have to devastate me.
Let's talk about The Leisure Seeker, although it isn't a brand new novel for you. It's from, what, 2009?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been floating around for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. But you've got some news about it, haven't you?
I did. Just about a month ago, I found out that an Italian director, Paolo Verze, is going to make his first English language film of the book, The Leisure Seeker, and it will be starring Helen Mirren and Donald Sutherland.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty surprising. I had not known. They had optioned the book about a year and a half ago, and every 4, 5, 6 months, I would get a short email, you know, telling me that, you know, Paolo is still interested in making your book into a film. And then I wouldn't hear anything for 4 or 5 months. And then, you know, I'd get an email, you know, Paolo has not forgotten about you, you know, that sort of thing. And interesting how my emails have Italian accents. But most of the time, and mercifully so, I was kind of kept in the dark, which I preferred, frankly, because I had some other dealings with production companies and screenwriters that people tell you lots of things, and they want to have news for you, so they
fluff you up just to let you down.
Yes, I'm not going to say they make things up, but they will embellish things or make things. Just because you tried to get a hold of Meryl Streep doesn't mean really anything. You know, you tried to do something, and I don't really need to hear about it and get all excited. So it was really perfect that I hadn't heard anything. I got a yet another short email in an Italian accent on a Thursday, and it was with the news in it, and it was pretty stunning. I was just sort of like, is this some sort of joke? And of course I Googled it right away, and they had just released the same information to the international foreign press, because the filmmaker Paolo was at Cannes premiering his newest film. And as part of that film business synergy or whatever, they also announced his next project, and that they had signed up Helen Mirren and Donald Sutherland for the
cast. Think that's pretty good casting. I mean, what do I know about such things? But when I read the book, and I knew that information going into reading the book, I could absolutely see both of them in those roles.
Yeah, no, it's pretty stunning. I'm beyond thrilled about it. And it's just a nice thing too. And it's a nice sort of validation too, because like I said, for a long time, people had talked about it. In fact, I had when I signed my original book contract, an option was already part of it. Somebody,
I read that somewhere, like 9 months before publication, they were wow.
And it was a good producer too, and who had a special agreement with HarperCollins to kind of basically get first crack at whatever books they were interested in. And so that was a kind of a strange and groundbreaking thing at the time. And but ultimately nothing ever came of it. And like I said, he was a well-respected sort of a producer who had made some really good films too. But nothing came of it, and that option expired, and then someone else picked it up for a couple of years and nothing happened there. And then finally,
tease.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So, and we're being a bit of a tease now, because we haven't talked about what the book is about. Can you give a little bit of a plot outline here?
Sure. And tell me if I start getting into too much detail, because it is essentially the story of an older couple in their 80s who decide to kind of escape all their doctors and their adult children and all the people who seem to be running their lives besides themselves. They decide to kind of kidnap themselves and go on like a last vacation together. And in the book, they hop in their, the Leisure Seeker is the name of their RV. Actually, it's an old, like a sort of Winnebago. And in the book, they just get in it and start traveling west, and they take Route 66 to California. And the book is essentially a road novel, with just their, which kind of flashbacks their lives and everything that kind of led up to this journey, and all the things that are going wrong with them now. They're both ill, so sort of between the two of them, they kind of make one person. John, the husband, is, he is suffering from, early stages Alzheimer's. She, Ella, she's got cancer of various types and has opted out of treatment. And so she knows what this is all about, and she wants to have a vacation again with her husband before it's too late. And so the book is the story of their journey.
Yeah, and it's great fun. You have a delicious sense of humor that you have to when you deal with topics like Alzheimer's and cancer.
Absolutely. That was really important to me, because I've been through that with my father. And my
dad. Was he something of a role model for this? Or
he was. Both my parents were, actually. Yeah. And I mean, their characters were inspired, and they're by no means, some sort of literal depiction of them or anything like that. But the John and Elle were definitely inspired by my mom and dad. And so it was. Yeah, but I knew how painful a lot of the Alzheimer's and illnesses and everything can be. So it felt very important to me to also make the book funny, and to also show that this was a couple that had you know, they had laughed together, they'd had a good life together and had fun together. And it continues, you know, through the book. And the book is by no means nonstop fun, that's for sure. But
no, there's some very painful moments in there as well, but they're tough cookies, both of them.
They really are. They are definitely of that greatest generation. And so it was interesting too, because I wound up writing the book shortly after my father died. And it was also a time too when I wasn't, it was like 7 years after, I don't know, my first novel was published. And I wasn't sure I was going to get another novel out into the world. And so I just wanted to write something that I wanted to write and that I sort of knew I could write. And I actually started from a short story that I had written earlier about a couple who are ill that go on a short road trip. And I just decided to make that road trip cross country. And it wound up being something that, I feel like I didn't realize it at the time, but it was something I needed to write. Yeah. And that it, I'm not a great, writing as catharsis sort of guy, but I think in some ways it was cathartic for me to sort of write about a world I knew pretty well and a family that I knew pretty well too, and ultimately it was one of those books that happened pretty quickly for me. I mean, I wrote it in quite a bit less than a year. And then there was a lot of time rewriting it as well.
Which is probably a good indication right there. I think if you struggle too much, maybe it's not the thing you're supposed to write.
I'm inclined to agree with you, Zinta. Yes, sometimes, it's not like you should just write only what's easy for you, but I do think you need to be vested in something. You need to be obsessed with something in order to write a novel about it, and or to be emotionally vested in it, because you have to feel something, because otherwise I think it does show up on the page too.
Yeah. So what is your involvement going to be, if any, with the movie itself? Are you writing the script, or are they hiring someone else to do that? How does that work?
Well, it can work any of those ways, but as it turns out, the director had a group of people that he had worked on with on many of his other films, and he wound up working with them. So there is a script already. There are definitely some cosmetic changes to the book, but I think the soul of the book is intact, which is really what I'm interested in. And he has a few different a few different screenwriters on it. And so the script is essentially done. So I'm not sure exactly what my part will be, other than I'm hoping to get over to that set for a little while.
Yeah, that was great fun.
Meet everybody. And it will be interesting. I think I will be, involved somewhat. They've all been very nice to me and very respectful. And, they've always been big fans of the book, and that's why this is happening, I guess. But it's pretty damn thrilling.
Oh, I would think so. Any talk yet, or is it way too early to talk about when we might see this on a screen?
Yeah, well, they're actually starting, to shoot the film, I believe it'll be July 25th.
Okay.
Really soon. And I think they'll be shooting for about 8 weeks, and they're planning on getting the film done, hopefully early, in the early part of next year. But, you can never really tell. But Paolo seems to be, he's one of those filmmakers that seems to be pretty regular about, getting a film out. Mm-hmm. If not every year, I think maybe every other year. So I'm not sure, but that's their plan. I know that.
Well, Michael, when you get nominated for the Oscars, I'm putting first dibs on for an interview with you at that time.
Okay. You've got it.
And before I let you go, I wanted to let you know that I read your Huffington Post article about Bongo. My sympathies and condolences, and I completely understand. I just about a week ago lost my dog, who had been with me almost 17 years.
Oh, so, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so it's, you know, there's always that funny guilt, because I've gone through a lot of pets in my lifetime. You know, it's like, gee, am I supposed to grieve this much? So I could identify.
Oh, well, I know that many other people have felt the same way. I heard from so many people about that piece, and it was really something I do write as a catharsis once in a while, because it was something that I just wrote when I was feeling a lot of pain about the death of my cat Bongo. And it was just something I just thought, I'm going to write this, and I'm going to be as completely and unabashedly honest as I can about this. And I'm glad I did. And I wasn't even sure I was going to ever even do anything with it. And then I just found that site Medium, and I thought, I'm just going to put this up here on it and, see what happens. And I was glad I did, because I heard from hundreds of people. And
yeah, I'm not at all surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, it was lovely. And I heard from a lot of men, too, because that's a big part of the article is about how men feel like they're not necessarily supposed to feel a particular way about a particular kind of animal, or how we're supposed to, I don't know, just blow everything off and just, you know, hey, I'm a man.
Yeah. Is it easier for a man maybe to express love for an animal? I mean, you guys are taught to be tough and never cry and all of those things that I hope someday will stop that attitude. Is it easier to connect with an animal in a way? Maybe you guys feel even more strongly than women do. I don't know.
I don't know. I think, you know, that pops up in the article, too, because, you know, just sort of talking about, you know, men are probably allowed to grieve for an animal maybe a short time, and it should be a dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A big, tough dog.
Big tough dog. And, you know, in my case, I was really grieving, you know, hard for a little 10-pound cat. And
yeah.
And that became one of the themes of the piece, too. It's sort of like, what does this matter of, you know, genus or the size or weight or whatever? What you're feeling is still what you're feeling. And none of that stuff should matter, but it does ultimately in your head.
Yeah.
And, especially the male mind, you know, there's a lot going on in there, or nothing, one or the other.
Yeah. And I've been told by some people, it's like, hurry up and get another dog. But I have found through past experiences that, you know, just like with anything else that causes grief, you need to give yourself time to heal.
I could not agree more. And I actually wound up, somebody interviewed me about that piece. And they just said that whole notion of getting another animal right away. And I think it's a horrible idea. I think you're just trying to not face your pain.
Exactly.
I have a very, very good friend, and they had a lovely little dog, and the dog passed. And my friend's wife was just devastated, and you know, my friend wanting to help, wanting to fix things again, which is part of what goes on in the male mind, you know.
Right.
Fix this, and you know, they got another dog, and the dog is very nice, but that dog forever has the taint on it of being the replacement dog, I think.
Yeah.
It's tough for the dog and tough for the humans too. And you're still going to hurt. There's still going to be pain. So it's, you can't just escape it. Yeah. So I agree with you completely, Zinta.
Well, and as any pet owner knows, pets, whether the cats or dogs or anything else, they all have their own personalities. So that's why I think the replacement doesn't work either. You know,
absolutely.
You have to embrace each personality.
Yeah, that personality is what you're missing. That's what's hurting. That's what's making you hurt. You know, so it's, you can't, you just can't.
Yeah. Well, salute to Bongo.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about your dog too.